Welcome to the Book Show. Elizabeth Berg is a New York Times bestselling author of such novels as Open House and The Story of Arthur Truelove, an author who is known for warmth, empathy, and emotional clarity. Before turning to writing, she worked as a registered nurse, an experience that continues to inform her compassionate portraits of aging, illness, and human connection, as she does in her latest novel, Life, a Love Story. Elizabeth Berg is next on The Book Show. Welcome to The Book Show, a celebration of reading and writers. I'm Joe Donahue. Elizabeth Berg has long been one of America's most beloved chroniclers of everyday life, a New York Times bestselling author whose novels, including Open House and The Story of Arthur Truelove, are known for their warmth, empathy, and emotional clarity. Her latest novel, Life, a Love Story, brings readers into the final chapter of a remarkable life. It centers on 92-year-old Florence Green, who, after receiving a terminal diagnosis, begins writing an autobiography in Things, a letter to a younger friend that traces her life through the objects she's kept. As Flo reflects on marriage, friendship, and long-buried secrets, she also embraces new experiences, proving it's never too late for small acts of courage or joy. Intimate and quietly profound, Life, a Love Story is a meditation on memory, forgiveness, and what it means to live fully, even at the very end of a life. It is a great pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Berg to this week's book show. How are you?
I'm just fine, thank you.
What a delight to have you on the program, and also a delight to have read this book. It is a beautiful, beautiful novel, and I said to a friend the other day that I am so mired in the hideousness of daily life and the news that to pick up this and to be in the grasp of Flo just has made me feel better about every aspect of life. And I thank you for that opportunity.
Okay, you just brought tears to my eyes. Thank you for saying that. You know, I look around and I look in people's faces, and it seems to me that there's a collective exhaustion and despair, and we're doing the best we can. But one of the things that really helps me is reading. And I think that people are finding that to be true in these times, that the particular kind of escape that allows, or validation or peace, you know, just sitting quietly and reading. So I'm glad you felt that way. And, you know, I know it's my book, but it actually makes me feel better about life, too, if I dip into it.
Because you think of, to me, it centers around this character, around Flo. This is an amazing woman.
Mm-hmm.
What was the genesis of that character, of how she came to you?
I wrote a collection of short stories called The Day I Ate Whatever I Wanted. And one of the stories is called How to Make an Apple Pie. And it's narrated by Flo. So she just sort of burst on the scene fully herself, and she's narrating a recipe, but she's taking these little diversions along the way, as she does in this book. It's kind of a wandering around in her consciousness. But I liked her voice. And so when I thought about writing this novel. I wanted to bring that voice back to narrate this. The second part was that I was in a house that was being sold, and it was a hoarder's house. And it's always sort of sad and interesting to me to be in a place like that, and you see all these parts, all these physical manifestations of a person's life. Why did she order that plate with James Dean on it? Not only that plate, but lots and lots of other ones. But what about this embroidered pillowcase? What about this salt and pepper shaker? So it seemed to me that you could tell a life story in objects, and that's what Flo does, of course.
Was that the idea from the beginning of to include the this letter that would go to someone that was special in her life that would identify these various objects and their importance?
But to add to what you just asked, I never know what I'm going to write. It's always it happens on the page. I have the merest wisp of an idea, but then I just start writing. And when the book started, Flo is talking about how she always wished she would have had a chicken. And this is meant to be a letter saying, I'm dying, I'm leaving you my things, but she starts talking about chickens. So I'm interested in the tangential stories that people tell on their way to tell another story. And sometimes that's where the real story is, the marginalia, so to speak.
Indeed, the recipient of this letter will be Ruthie, and Ruthie is someone that Flo knew from when she was a little girl. So they live next door. And what is it about Ruthie that is the connection to Flo to think of this person who is not a great part of her life now to be someone to communicate with in the waning days of her life.
Well, she has no children of her own, and she kind of adopted Ruthie as a daughter when Ruthie was growing up right next door to her and saw her through the days when she would be making mud pies and offering one to Flo, to her teenage years when she had her heart broken for the first time and said, I'm through with boys. I'm just going to be a veterinarian, to falling in love, going off to college, and so on, really all through her whole life. So yeah, it seems natural to Flo to leave these things to Ruthie, if not indeed her entire house, because Ruthie is contemplating divorce. And the last time she saw Ruthie was feeling kind of sentimental about the town in which she grew up. So it occurs to Flo that maybe she might even want her house.
It also gives Flo an opportunity to look at her own marriage and to communicate some of the happenings of that marriage to Ruthie and to put it into some context, because it's how it appears to us in one way, and until things are explained, that there's a context there that perhaps had been missing prior.
Right. And she really wants to tell Ruthie about this, but it's very hard to talk about. And so she kind of keeps putting it off and talking about a toothpick dispenser rather than a much greater subject than that.
It seems to me that you would have had fun like picking the items.
Yeah, and you know, in the same way that Flo just sort of showed up and started talking, those objects too, I didn't have a list of things that I wanted to include. They occurred more organically than that. I was struck, by the way, when this book was coming out and we had a marketing meeting with my publisher, and I was struck by the way that everyone in that meeting, and there were young people there, everybody had at least one object in their house that meant a great deal to them that they might be hard pressed to explain to someone who just came upon it, you know, or for the other person to understand if they just came upon it, if they said, what is this? But then you hear the story behind it. And that's what Flo's trying to do is explain the worth of things because of the stories behind them.
Elizabeth Berg is our guest on this week's book show. The name of the book, Life, a Love Story. It is a novel. It is from out from Random House. There is also a death doula in the book, aside from the letters, but is there when the letter is not being written, and as the day to day of the last years of Flo's life are there. What brought you to that character of taking a look at a death doula and someone who is always there for people and to help them, which is exactly where Flo is, but also to turn the page and to have Flo help this woman as well?
I was a nurse, I worked as a registered nurse for 10 years, and I have a great deal of affection and regard for nurses, and I'm very interested in death doulas. I'd not heard about them until recently, so I spoke to someone who is a death doula because I wanted to make sure I was presenting what they do correctly. And she said, yeah, that's it. I was... I told you I don't plot when I write, and I think that sometimes people in the helping profession get so much joy and connection from what they do that it's almost a little dangerous. Like then they don't need to work at it in other parts of their life. I can tell you that when I was a young nurse, I'm a shy person, and it's hard for me to express affection or show love sometimes, but I could do it as a nurse. I could do it in spades as a nurse because I was protected by my role. And that's what Teresa is like. She had a terrible experience early on in her love life, absolutely devastated her. And so she's afraid now. She's afraid to fall in love with someone. She's afraid of what might happen. She tells Flo, I get everything I need from my patients, and Flo thinks otherwise. And so Flo has a little mission in these remaining days, and she is resolved to help Teresa move forward toward thinking that maybe there could be something else in her life, specifically the guy who works as a checkout clerk.
Yeah, she's a bit of a matchmaker.
Yeah.
It's nice to have this character and have these characters be friends.
Yes, and she makes another friend too, and I think it's to kind of bring home a message I learned also being a nurse, which is that until you die, you're still living. And when you're still living, you can still do a lot. Even if you're bedridden, you can still do a lot. Flo's not. Flo happens to be in a position where she can walk to the nearby library, she can walk to the beauty parlor where she takes herself up on another dare and gets a blue streak in her hair, and so she's living until the last moment.
It is someone who is so full of life and yet is seems to be very okay with the idea that the end is near and acknowledges the aches and the pains and the twinges and realizes that today is today and tomorrow may not be. That's a wonderful attitude.
Yeah, and I've certainly seen those kinds of accommodations before in my work and in my life. And I guess I hope for myself to have some measure of grace, if I happen to know. We don't always know, when the moment's going to come, you step off a curb and goodbye, it's so arbitrary. But for people who do know, who have been told that they have a limited amount of time, I have not seen a whole lot of bitterness. I've seen a lot of grace.
I love your use of the word grace because it's something that I wrote down in my notes as I was reading the novel of the grace of this character and of the story as a whole. It's that's something that is often hard to put a finger on of exactly what it is, but it seems to be present in great abundance in this woman, Flo, and in this novel.
When she first goes to her doctor, she's 92, and he tells her the news.
Right.
He feels bad, you know. He feels bad telling her that she's going to die, and she says, "I'm 92," and he says, "Still," and she says, "I had to agree with him there." So, she's a person who wants to wring every bit of life that she can out. And again, I hope to have that kind of attitude.
When you write a book like this that is rather joyful, it is filled with joy, is that sort of the mood in the room when you're writing it as well?
It is. And it was such a relief. You said at the beginning that, in these times, it's a book like this. And look at the proliferation of books like this now. I haven't read The Correspondent yet. It's on my nightstand along with 500 other books. But that and Theo, is it Theo Golden? Do you know that?
Oh yes, the new yes.
Yeah. But I think that's one of the saving things about art, is that it meets the moment at a time when people are really psychologically suffering. All of a sudden, these things appear, and art always does that. Whether it's painting or dance or theater, it's such a relief to escape into that world. So writing it, yes, I could go into my office and become flow. Because writing is acting on paper, right?
Yeah, and how do you but you get a couple cracks at the scene, don't you?
Yeah, you can revise. You can, but for me as a writer, when I'm in it, I'm in it. I'm not even here. So I don't do a whole lot of revision, but I do think I do a lot of thinking, even if it's subconsciously, before I sit down to write. So it's ready to come out.
I want to ask you about before I move on, because I want to talk to you about that acting on the page. But let me first say that when you were talking about Theo of Golden and The Correspondent, the book that the books that I immediately thought of as I was reading this, and it's not the first time I've made this connection with you, but is because you remind me of her and she reminds me of your work is Fanny Flagg.
Yeah, I love Fanny Flagg. Yes. And she, you just see her book in the bookstore and go, "Oh, thank God."
Right,
I look
exactly.
at it, I just buy it. Bring it home, get into it.
But again, there's that joy. There's that there are the realities of life. There is the living and the dying and the dealing with the pain, but there overriding it all, there is a pure joy.
Yeah. I might have to start the Optimist Book Club.
Yeah. Oh, that would be a good idea. That's a great idea. Elizabeth Berg is our guest. The name of the book is A Life, a Love Story. I have to say, I read this book when it was out in Galley, and then I was lucky enough to listen to it, the audiobook. You read it and talk about acting. So what is it like for you to read this work and to tell the story in your very own voice?
It's terrifying. It is. I did work as an actress for a while in an improvisational group in Minneapolis. It was called Dudley Riggs' Brave New Workshop. So it's fun for me to do it, but when I get in that recording booth and you have the headphones on and it's very intense and you're hearing your own voice echo in your head, and every time I do it, I think, why am I doing this? Why don't I just have some actor, just turn it over. But the thing is, I know how I want that character to say that phrase. I know what kind of feeling I want to inform a certain passage. So I'm very self-critical. I'm dying of embarrassment kind of the whole time, but there is satisfaction in doing it.
There is there's a southern lilt to this character.
Yeah. Yeah, I lived in Texas for a while. But
That doesn't come across as much on the page as it does, obviously, in the audio.
right. I wanted her. Well, in part, when you're recording, you want to differentiate your characters. And if she's having a conversation with Teresa, and Teresa says, "I don't see why people are critical about living alone," and then Flo answers, you get the she said. But it's easier if Flo says, "Well, honey, I think you should just think about this. You know who's talking then." And it's fun to do. You just have to remember to make sure you try to be consistent. Something interesting happened with reading this one, which is that I started crying, which I've never done. Oh, yes, I did. I cried when I talked about my dog dying.
Oh, sure.
Everybody cries for
Of
that.
course.
But this was Teresa's talking about a young boy who dies, and she is at the bedside when that occurs, and she's very much affected by that. And I wonder about that. I'm attracted to hospice nursing, but I worry that, yikes, how hard would that be? I know it would be joyful, but how hard would it be? And so that was my kind of wondering on the page what it would be like.
Given that you cried, is there a disconnect that comes when, I mean, obviously some time has taken place since you have written it, that when you're exposed to it once again and you're reading it and performing it for that term, that it hits you a different way?
Yeah, that's such an interesting question, and it's true, because when I read a character out loud, it is like acting, and writing is like acting, in that you disappear into the character. And so there is a disconnect in that regard. You become that character.
As you said, you were a nurse for 10 years, and then when did fiction writing become something that you knew wanted that you wanted to be your life and your career?
I was a kind of different kid, very dreamy and shy, and I wanted to be a writer. I wanted to be a poet. And when I was 9 years old, I sent a poem out, which was immediately rejected. And I was so devastated, I didn't submit anything for 25 years. So I always wrote. I have a friend who kept all my letters and made them into a book. And I just finally decided, okay, I'm gonna try this. And I was still working as a nurse, but I started writing for magazines, and I did that for 10 years. And I never thought I would write a novel. The very idea, I couldn't even say the word novel. But I took a fiction writing class, and I liked how I could make things up, just lie on the page. So I wrote my first novel very, very quickly. I think it only took about 6 weeks. It's a little novel, but still, it just came out like throwing up. I mean, I just couldn't stop. It was just came pouring out on the page. And that was the beginning of my career as a novelist.
And once you found that, I say this with great reverence, but you're prolific. These stories do, as you say, not to say vomit again, but you are able to produce these at a pretty good clip.
You know, not by design, though. I think that I love writing so much. I always feel like I just have to tell somebody something. And the vehicle for me is to write it. I do better writing it than I do talking it. Everything I mean to say about what I'm talking about can appear in writing the way it cannot in conversation. So people would say, "So what do you try to do a book a year?" And no, I didn't try to do a book a year. That's just what happened. Because as soon as I finished one, I started another. I wasn't finished yet. I had more to say.
And even with this book, do you feel at the end, I mean, this has a conclusion, obviously, but is there a thought of what it is like to be done with these characters and move on to the next cast, to use the acting metaphor?
I think that certain characters always live inside you. Maybe all of them do. I'm at a time in my life. I'm 77 now, and I'm at a time in my life when I'm thinking about, well, what do you want to do now? Do you want to just keep writing and writing and writing, or do you want to look up a little more and take a walk around the block and speak to the robins? And do you want to let your life be a little more relaxed? I'm at a tipping point, I think.
You don't strike me as the type of person that could just stop writing, though.
I think I will always write in some way or another. Hey, maybe I'll become a poet at the end of my life. But I don't. It really is what I said. I'm really having a kind of examination now of what I want to or should be doing, and I don't know what I'm going to decide yet. But you're right in that I think real writers always write whether they publish or not.
Don't you think Flo would tell you to keep going?
Yeah. Hey, why are you talking about quitting? You just go ahead and do it. You love it.
We were talking about Fannie Flagg earlier. The other person that came to mind, and someone I'm just wondering if it was an influence on you is Ann Tyler.
I love Ann Tyler.
Yeah.
Absolutely love Ann Tyler. And the first book I read of hers many years ago, I was so profoundly admiring. I was just shocked and so immersed in her world. And I ran out and got all her books that she'd written thus far. And I just had an Ann Tyler binge, and I still adore her. She and Alice Munro.
There's such depth and beauty to those characters, but obviously the day-to-day stuff that we deal with.
Both of them are so magnificent at that. And I think for those of us who feel like there's a lot going on between or behind the scenes all the time, there's a lot going on inside people that's so interesting.
Yeah.
It's nice to see it play out on the page. It may seem simple. It may seem like it's not much of an event. These are not car race novels, but there's so much happening.
You mentioned that the reading this book, you cried and also cried over the passing of your dog. Do you have a new dog?
I always have a dog.
Okay, good.
I always have a dog. I had two, and the older one died. Well, one died at 14, and then another one died at 14. And the one I have now is 6 and weighs 94 pounds and thinks there's nothing finer than leaning against you.
Well, and there's nothing finer than that, right?
That's right.
The name of the new book is Life, a Love Story, a novel that is out from Random House. It's quite a glorious novel, and it is so beautiful to read. Elizabeth Berg, I can't thank you enough for spending time with us. It's a delight to speak to you, and I so appreciate you sharing with us.
Come on over for dinner.
I can't wait. Elizabeth Berg is the author of the new novel Life, A Love Story. It's published by Random House. Thanks to our producer, Sarah LaDuke. Write to us at book@wamc.org. The latest on National Productions programs is available via the Airwaves newsletter at wamc.org and on social media at WAMC Radio. Bookmark us for next week. And thanks for listening for The Book Show. I'm Joe Donahue.